You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Wednesday's episode of the Terrace Scottish Football Podcast. I am Craig Fowler and I'm joined by Joel Skedd.
Hello.
And Craig G. Telford.
Hi there.
So, yes, more unusual dates. You're basically going to get a podcast 2 days in a row.
If this feels like a Thursday, I've got my mind geared up this weekend
Thursday
tomorrow.
Thursday just feels exactly like a Thursday.
But it's not.
It's not. Because that's how the days of the week work.
Yes, it's a simple fact. That I'm sure even Tory MPs could spin to their liking. But right, so we had a show planned for tonight. It was very topical. And then Anne Budge, as she tends to do, dropped an atom bomb on my working life. And so we've decided to start with that. Anne Budge's 1200 word statement, essentially saying, I'm backing Craig Levine.
And a middle finger and maybe some Vickies up to the home
she support. Gets it right up the trolls with her very first line. I read it here when she says, I want to address all genuine heart supporters.
Yeah.
And the second, I will address recent media coverage. So I think there's a fair few people. She doesn't name names. I don't want to give too much away. I think she's having a go at somebody called M. Stewart.
that's obvious.
Michael S. maybe, who really seems to have a bee in his bonnet about Craig Levine.
He doubled down after he tweeted. Well, quoted a statement and basically doubled down, just saying again that he has the safest job in world football, but also that he now honestly believes that Budge would rather leave than sack or relieve Craig Levine off his duties as manager and director of football.
So we should probably read out the bit that eventually got to the point. It didn't come till the second last paragraph where it actually said what the entire statement was basically about. Because in good Budge form, she rambled on for 18 pages.
Front and back. A lot of ellipses as well.
Oh, she loves ellipses. So it was. It finished off on, in short.
Yep.
Our board remains behind the manager, his coaching staff and his team. ... Not because he is, quote-unquote, untouchable. Not because he is, quote-unquote, all-powerful. And not because we are, quote-unquote, weak. As has been suggested, we remain behind him because we believe in a plan we have jointly put together. We will continue to scrutinise our on-field performances, and should we feel our plans are going astray and our approach needs to be justified, we will respond accordingly.
This is one of the eight or nine sections, paragraphs, just even wee snippets that I have pulled out and kind of bugged me. They mention the plan a lot throughout the statement. What is the plan? Now, that's one thing they've not explained, what the plan is. If it's sign a lot of players, they've done that.
But it's like when it goes astray. I like to see what, so this is all part of the master plan.
This is where it comes back to, is the fact that this is quite early on in the statement. Like every other Hart supporter at the moment, I am hugely frustrated with the words frustrated. Now, that's a word that really frustrates Hearts fans, yes, because Craig Levein uses it all the time. Or indeed lack of them from the first five Premiership fixtures. Five Premiership fixtures. What about the East Fife defeat on penalties? The performance against Stenhouse Muir? What about no league wins since March 30th? Or seven league wins since the 23rd of October? Yeah. And general standard of performance, which has been bordering on embarrassing for a long time.
Yeah, they haven't won in 12 league games?
12 league games, yeah.
And I think the BBC put the table up the other day. The form table went from October 30th last year, then Hearts would be bottom of the table.
Oh, put my Ann Budge hat on for a second. She mentions injuries many times in the statement.
Yep.
Does she have a point there? Because I'm surely there's something about like, yes, the guys at Hearts are missing just now. So what, six or seven that would be part,
yes,
of that?
So she says we have a very strong squad, arguably the strongest we've put together over the last six seasons. True, and she rightly mentions...
Is that true? Do you agree with that?
I think this is a strong squad, yes.
And she rightly mentions that Levine's not been able to field his strongest 11 yet this season. However, they have a squad, but she mentions squad. They built a squad. They invested in 17 players last summer and then a further 8 or 9 this summer. And the word that stands out for me is squad. There's a squad of 30 there. There's a further 11 on loan. So 41 players who have had first team experience on Hearts' book. And they can't beat Ross County at home, they can't beat Hamilton at home, and they got beat by Motherwell at home.
No, they thumped by Motherwell.
Yeah, I mean, it was 3-2, but it was that was very generous for Hearts.
She seems to contradict herself a lot in that, and that's kind of a good example, is that she mentions injuries, but she mentions also that they've built a squad to counteract the injuries this summer. Because with injuries in mind, I think that's what she says. But now they've had injuries and they're bottom of the table. So how's that going according to the plan?
It seems at times with the ellipsis that she started writing it and it's going down. It's like she's explaining, it's like, oh, injuries, everything's not going to go according to plan. And then she stops and realises, if I continue down this path, I'm going to be criticising Craig Levein. Ellipsis, ellipsis, ellipsis. Anyway, supporters, media...
It's the one where she says, like, however, running a football club, ... like any business, ... is an exact science. There's no need for ellipses at that point.
Yeah, I'm not sure she understands ellipses. Gets ellipses.
No, she doesn't.
Has Phil Tungo reading these before?
She famously doesn't edit them. Right. Or doesn't allow them to be edited.
See, I genuinely... I know I've got a blind spot when it comes to Vladimir Romanov. I hold him in high regard. But I think this is up there with some of the bonkers stuff that he's put out.
Yeah, I mean, she does go on a lot about the media at the end, which, I mean, the fans aren't buying it at this time, man. And I mean, it's also quite funny as well, because she knows for the most part she's basically talking about Michael Stewart.
But, I mean, she talks about pundits putting out as... it's like they're putting out as fact, but I think a lot of it is... people saying they're pundits or journalists, if it's like an opinion piece, writing an opinion piece and what they believe from seeing from the outside. And it's easy to understand why pundits like Michael Stewart or journalists have got this idea of the board being weak or of Craig Levein having a...
Because it goes back to the old joke, is Craig Levein going to sack himself?
Yeah.
Which we've heard a lot.
Yeah, I know. And she basically states out point by point, says exactly what Craig does, and that he is being held to account at these board meetings, and the fact that they're not just saying, oh, well done, Craig, for being bottom of the table, and when do you think you're going to sack yourself, pal? I mean, I think they do have the power to do it. I just think that she's probably overly enamoured with Craig Levein as somebody in this job. She thinks that... Maybe, to be fair, I think as well, a lot of times when you listen to Craig Levein speak after games, especially if you don't have a lot of experience in football, I think he would come across as very persuading if he's saying, no, we are going to turn the corner of this because of X, Y, and Z. Whereas for those who've spent a lot more time in football or watching football, we can easily show you a football team where the the position of the manager has become untenable because it's just there's too much malaise and you need a fresh start.
Do Hearts have any good football men on the board?
It doesn't seem like I'm not going to.
Sorry, I was gendered. That's why I'm not going to
profess to know the identity of all the members of the board.
I think he was the football person on the board when he was director of football. The big issue is the fact that everyone, not just Hearts fans, see that the club are underperforming massively and been underperforming for a long time. And there's a lot of 90% of other clubs would have sacked Levine by now because of the city. I think there's actually a bigger issue. I don't know if you want to jump in just now, but
I'm just going to say there's one question that Budge should be answering, which I don't know if she's asked. I don't think she's actually talked frankly to him in a while. Why was Ian Catherall sacked for a run of results?
It's effectively
that's not worse than Levine's right now. What about Levine? Does she believe so much that she didn't believe in Catherall? Because Catherall's form was relegation form. Catherall was very poor in the League Cup, and he didn't even get to survive to the league season.
And you look at Levine, so he came in and took over from that season, so he got the majority of that season, and then he got the whole of last season, and then he's already started, and he's got more of Catherall this season, and there's been no real signs of progression, where it's that's the start of last season is actually the blip. To take on to the bigger issue, a lot of fans will see that statement as a big fuck you. To the fans, because there's a lot who would have, if the club got rid of Levine after the Motherwell defeat a couple of weeks previously, the club thought, a lot of fans went, the board understand, that's fine, but this statement is only kind of strengthened the feeling of distrust and even anger towards the board.
I mean, you were outside the what's it? I keep calling it Margaret Thatcher Plaza. What's it called? The foundation
Plaza.
Somebody put that in the group chat, and that's what it sort of stuck in my head. But I mean, you were outside there on Saturday. What is the general? I mean, is there anyone who's defending Lafina, or is it just sort of like about 100% of the fans are going against them?
I'm not.
He's got a prominent Twitter account who might defend them, but apart from that,
I've not seen anyone.
Yeah, I mean, how could you at this point?
It's impossible to even, because there's even, I think even now with this statement that people who are like really, understood that Levine had to go, but were back in the board's like, oh, I'm budged on, even they're starting to turn because of just how strong Budge's feelings towards backing Levine as manager. It's like, no one can understand what the board are seeing about this plan that's working that others can't.
Yeah, because you asked me before, because she mentioned genuine supporters in the statement, and that's what seems like a fuck you, because it's basically kind of implying that genuine Hearts supporters would not be calling for the manager's head or not be backing the board on this, which is just insane. And there was, like you asked me, Craig, before we went on air, is there kind of a divide in the Hearts supporters? I was like, well, the what's of the fight in terms of who liked and who didn't like Butch, because some saw her loyalty to Levine is a little bit too much, but we're still thankful for what the previous work she's done at the club. And thought, well, Levine will go eventually, and this will, you know, then she came back to doing, or then the sport could get back to fully supporting, except from the, to use a bit of term, the wee fannies that have been, you know, banned for being wee arseholes, basically.
I've spoken to people again on social media. It's not as cut and dry as maybe the club have put out, because it goes back to last season when two fans were suspended from Tynecastle for quote unquote alleged racist abuse towards I think it was a Motherwell player.
Yeah,
they were cleared, and the club never kind of came out and said,
yeah, never put out a statement. They put out a statement quickly enough to condemn it. But
at least Falkirk, I mean, if you can say that about Falkirk, got a lot wrong last season, but they did that after the whole Denon Lewis sort of thing. They'd apologised to the supporters.
So to be succinct in what we're saying, so it's basically there was like three factions. There was some who, maybe like myself, Joe, people who were like kind of rolled their eyes at all this, or must be family friendly and all this stuff, but put up with it because, you know, the football's going that way anyway. There's the kind of fringe group who hate that and hate her and hate everything she's done and have hated her since Nielsen was in charge.
Yeah.
And there's those that are behind her. And now she's just uniting all these factions.
That's the thing. Some of my mates in the group chat I've got for Hearts, they were absolutely livid with the statement. And that's one thing that came out. Everyone said, It's like there's no hiding place. Yeah. She has united all fans. So there, I guess
it
was a divide.
Like, I had guys in my group chat who were very much on Bud's side, but they were like, it sounds like she lost the plot.
It's like that, you know, that Predator meme with the two biceps. You know? Like family friendly cunts, wee fannies, yeah, budge out.
Oh, if I've got time later on, I'll try and get that made up.
There's one as well, a lot of these hands sort of linking, yeah, like in a circle, so maybe you could do that.
Yes. So, just one further thing I mentioned, she does say that stuff reported in this morning's papers that Stephen Robinson was top of the list to replace Levine if he was sacked, was basically wide of the mark, or basically invented by an agent or whatever.
Yeah, I don't think she needed to include that after the previous 1,000 words.
Well, I got lost. I had to write a separate article because like, people are just going to miss this because there's so much stuff in it. A statement that was the exact opposite of the heart statement that came out today came out from Patrick Thistle, which basically may as well have just said Gary Caldwell's been sacked.
Can I
say, first of all, fair play to Patrick Thistle for actually saying he's been relieved of his duties and not saying, oh, we've come to a mutual
termination.
To be fair, the club have updated it at the start, basically. Gary Caldwell has left and Brian Kerr has left, so it's Jerry Britton, who's the chief... No, sorry, Jerry Britton...
Academy director Scott Allison and first team player Kenny Miller will all take charge of the squad for this weekend's Scottish Library Premiership home match against Dunfermline.
You know. Well, that's
a brain trust right there.
I don't know. Jerry Britton could be. No, he managed them previously, wasn't it? Yeah. Him and Derek Mackay.
Derek White.
Who's Derek Mackay? Christ knows.
Loads of people.
Loads of people. Yeah, God, that's horrendous. Of course, you keep forgetting that Kenny Miller managed Livingston.
Yep.
Not very well.
The only down point they've had in like the last 4 years.
You know something, Gary Caldwell never really struck me as a particularly good fit for Partick Thistle, and I don't know what it was, and I don't want to like say because he was an ex-Celtic player, but I think something about that perhaps counted against him, and I think that some of the team building exercises that they introduced, which might have actually been decent ideas, the speed dating that he brought in, the SAS stuff where a player was kidnapped from his bed. You know, in isolation, these might be interesting ideas, but it's just like a maelstrom of underperformance.
Don't you think it would be, sorry, just on the SAS, it would be hilarious if that's how they sacked him, by getting the SAS to kidnap him,
to the training ground, waterboard them.
Well, they could have done the speed dating, and then it would have been, what's his name, was it Colin Beattie?
Yeah.
He just did... Speed dating, so it's just all these lashes. Then Colin Beattie sits down across him. Like, what are you doing here? Gary, I've got some bad news.
I'll be honest and say that I haven't seen much of Partick Thistle this season, but I did watch their match against Arbroath on Friday night that was on BBC Scotland, and Partick Thistle were really poor. I mean, they lined up in a sort of 4-3-3 formation with Tommy Robson playing in the middle of that three-man midfield. Now, Tommy Robson's a fairly mediocre left back, so goodness knows what they were doing, thinking, playing in the middle of the park. And Arbroath were the better team throughout the match, and they probably should have won the game. Partick Thistle admittedly did come into it towards the end, and they scored a really good goal through Kenny Miller, but I don't think that full time teams should, they've no divine right to beat the part time teams in a championship, but that was a very alarming performance, and I just think that, yeah, not a great fit. And I don't think there'll be any part, I don't want to speak for a support that I don't know that much about, but I can't imagine there'll be anyone sorry to see him move on.
No, there's not a lot. It's been throughout his tenure, he's never really been well liked by the Thistle fans. They didn't get immediate bounce off him. He then sold Chris Erskine. He eventually would then get rid of Chris Doolan.
But I'd say in his defence, that was a difficult thing. You look at Chris Doolan, he hasn't exactly set the heather on fire at Ayr United.
Right.
But so Doolan was probably going to have to be moved on at some point. So whoever did that was obviously going to have a very... You know, going to come up against a lot of resistance. I think the fact that it was Gary Caldwell was the person that moved on Chris Doolan, that exacerbates an already difficult problem.
He was They've had a strange record so far this season in that they haven't won at all in the league, but they're undefeated in the cup, including two games against top flight opposition.
I will ask Partick Thistle supporters, would you rather be relegated and win the Challenge Cup?
or
the League Cup, or finish in 8th place and have nothing?
I think probably take a League Cup win.
I think the League Cup, especially since their next game's away to Celtic. But I think
this goes, it goes back to Alan Archibald, and
you can't blame Arlen Archibald.
No, I'm not blaming Alan Archibald. I'm actually not blaming the club, but perhaps they should.
Who are you blaming?
I am actually blaming the club. Well, because they should have cut losses and started the season they got relegated.
Yes.
And in that championship season, the first down from the Premiership, they kept with them, and that regression continued.
Yes.
From the Premiership.
Agreed.
And it's kind of just continued. And you look at their team, they came down and you thought they probably had a Premiership team to go back up, and now it's a mid-table championship team at best.
I mean,
there's a lot of names I do not know there.
To defend Gary Cole somewhat, I think this hasn't been the easiest time for them over the summer and into the start of the season, because Thistle have had all the ongoing stuff with the proposed takeover.
There was not something as well. He was promised something like £100,000 to spend on player or something, that there was a chunk of money set aside for wages.
He had four players lined up,
yeah,
and then he was basically told that they wouldn't be signing those four players. However, since then, I think it was made out at the time, and this was just around the first weekend of the season, I think it was made out that that would be it. But since then, have actually added to the team. I think at least two players I can remember them signing, including Dario Zanatta, of course.
No, of course, yeah.
It's not like the money's been taken away entirely, but then that maybe still does disrupt you. If you've got four players, especially while the transfer window's still open, and you think that I'd like to bring these guys in, and then for 2 weeks you're told, oh, we can't sign anybody. It's very likely that at least a couple of those players they had earmarked have moved on to other clubs.
It'd be interesting to see what Caldwell does next, because his managerial career has sort of been a bit of a downward trend. When he started at Wigan,
definitely.
You know, I think he did reasonably. Did he get a promotion with Wigan?
Yeah, he did get a promotion with Wigan.
Then moved to Chesterfield and ended up getting hounded out of Chesterfield. Then moved to Thistle, and like I say, was never a particularly popular candidate for the job. So interesting to see where they go next. I think as well, Stefan Bienkowski tweeted out that, is it Kenny Miller has seen 8 managers in the last 5 years?
Was
go
it more than that? I thought it was
including
more
than them. No, one of them was including himself as well.
So you've obviously got McCann, Caldwell,
Miller,
Marte Cashinha.
In the last 5 seasons, Kenny Miller has witnessed 8 managers he was playing on their loser job, including himself.
There you go then.
It's hard when your main striker wants to play every single position on the park at once. He saw that Bugs Bunny cartoon and he thought, that's got some good ideas.
His goal against Arbroath was very well taken.
It was.
You can't take that away from him. I'm not suggesting you would, actually, but nevertheless.
Okay, let's move in to League 2. That's quite a drop.
Oh, great. The lowest common denominator banter there. Fair play to the pair of us.
Right, we're going all the way down to third from bottom of League 2 in Stennis Muir, another club who have partied with the manager. Was that today or yesterday?
That was last night.
Last night. So two managers have gone in 24 hours. The third is, definitely not gone. But that was a long statement.
When we were planning this podcast and we were talking about the topics, I was told to prepare 2 lower league sides, and I didn't want to talk about Stennis Muir, because the last time the three of us were on, I talked about Stennis Muir and so on, and it's boring because we're essentially going to repeat ourselves here, but it's topical, so we'll talk about it. Colin McMenamin was sacked on Tuesday night. Now the club are in 8th in League 2, 5 points from 6 matches, and they were well beaten by Cowdenbeath 3-0 on Saturday. We'll save that performance for one side, because I do want to talk about Cowdenbeath. Now, after that match, going into the match, like talking to supporters in the bar, it's all a small sample size, but there's a feeling that McMenamin really needed to make the most of this match against Cowdenbeath, because the next games are against Brechin City at home and Stirling Albion away. So between Cowden, I think Stennis Muir badly underestimated Cowden, but going into that match between Cowden, Brechin and Stirling, there's a thought that 7 points would be a good return from that, you know, to basically kickstart the season, propel them up the table and get them into that throng of teams challenging for the top four. But they were rubbish against them, and McMenamin's record, McMenamin took over in November last year and he's played 30 league games, won 7 of them and only 2 home games. Now, I was thinking back to stuff that Sean McGuigan had said about Barry Smith's time in charge of Raith Rovers. Now, when Barry Smith was in charge of Raith Rovers, they actually won a lot of their home games. So most Raith Rovers supporters wouldn't have been aware as to how bad the team were. They'd have probably thought, well, we're doing really well at home. How come we can't translate this away? But Stenismuir have been especially poor at home in the league, and I think that's exacerbated people's opinion of Colin McMenamin and need to provoke some sort of change. Now, they were expected challenge for promotion this season, but they're miles off the pace. And
you weren't happy with recruitment, were you?
Oh no, no, that's I was going to come on to okay. that.
I wanted you to be, and you just feel
yes,
like
no, no, that's fine. So you can chip in and talk about specific players if you want, but. The recruitment has been the biggest problem where, and we're repeating this from last week, but I think that Stenismuir had a bit of money to spend. They identified some targets, one of whom apparently was Don Thomas, that I found out. So you're never going to sign Don Thomas.
He's been offered an extra 12 months by Kelly.
I was right about Don Thomas. I was right. But the fact that Stenismuir ran for them, I think that kind of suggests that the recruitment was a wee bit ambitious. Always good to have ambition, but you've got to temper ambition with realism, and Dom Thomas is never going to go into League 2, not after the season that he had with Dumbarton. So I think the only target they successfully managed to land was Chris O'Neill from Airdrie, and the rest of the squad was sort of a sort of hodgepodge of players who discarded from elsewhere, a couple of loan signings here and there. And I think they started the season by wanting to play a 4-4-2 when the football actually started against Albion Rovers and then Queen's Park in the first two league games. It quickly became apparent that the midfielders that he signed were not good enough to play in that formation, so he had to change from a 4-4-2 into a 3-5-2. You've only really got two like orthodox central defenders, so you're having to play a sort of midfielder auxiliary defender in there, play sort of like fullbacks and wingers in the wing-back positions just to compensate for the fact that you don't have the bodies in the middle of the park. And that really wasn't getting the best out of anyone. And on top of that, players seem to lose confidence in themselves very, very quickly. You'll see Stenismuir players try to start the match brightly, passing it through the midfield, looking to keep the ball on the deck. But then when things don't go the way, it just gets shelled from backwards to forwards. And it's just dispiriting to watch.
So what kind of manager does Steny need to get them galvanised this season? Is there anybody who can come in and take this outfit, this hodgepodge outfit, as you put it, and turn them into something that will challenge or even get into the playoffs?
Well, David Irons has been appointed on an interim basis. That was announced just before I was leaving work, so I'd updated my notice about Dave Irons has come back in.
Previously Steny manager?
He was, aye, and weirdly enough, he joined the club in sort of late 2010. The club were in a similar position, albeit in the second division, where there was a decent-ish group of players there that just needed sort of like solidifying, sorting out, and that's something that Dave Irons managed to do. Two of the big players that he signed was Eric Payton, who was released when Dundee went into administration, and Michael Devlin, on loan from Hamilton Academical. Obviously, he's gone on to play for Aberdeen. And the pair of them were smashing signs for Stenismuir, and the results over the latter part of that season were excellent, coupled with Alloa Athletics, who were in the playoffs at the time at Christmas, who eventually ended up getting relegated. And the season, the following year that Dave Irons had, some of the best football I've seen from Stenismuir. He had a right good group of players there. So he's only taken an interim basis, but going forward, some of the names that have been mooted, Tam Courts, who was at Kelty Hearts, Stephen Swift, who's done a decent job at BSC Glasgow.
He's meeting these guys.
And, of course,
all the stars.
All the stars. And of course, someone like Stevie Aitken, although he was apparently approached by Brechin but wanted to hold out for a higher profile job.
He's got it then.
I don't know about that. Who are a better club? Brechin are a better club than Steny. I think most clubs are bigger than Steny. Yeah, well, if he's not going to go to Brechin, then he's probably not going to come to Stenhouse Muir. But it's just, I loved Colin McMenamin as a player at Stenhouse Muir because he was there. Scott Booth signed him. I was very sceptical at first because, of course, he gave that interview with the Daily Record when he said Scottish football's dead. That's why I'm going to join Celtic Nation. And also, look how that turned out. But there was when he came out, kind of the feeling.
Remember Celtic Nation, Joe?
Yes.
But it was this idea, you know, that he's sort of come back up to Scotland with his tail between his legs and he's basically at Stenhouse Muir because he couldn't get anything better. So I was really sceptical of him, but he totally won me over with his performances, and he was the best player in a very poor team, and he will be one of my all-time favourite Stenny players. However, as a manager, you know, the only one performance I can say about it was the beating Falkirk in the Cup.
Worth it?
You got to say that day itself was great, but if you take the long term effects of the club that are staring into potential relegation from League Two, then you probably say no.
And also, as well, had it been better overall rather than just in that one game, Stenny would have been in the league with Falkirk and had four cracks at beating them.
Yeah, you know something, absolutely. The relegation under an Athletic was some of the mimsiest performances I've seen from the Warriors.
Should he have been, I know it's easy with hindsight, but should he have either went or continued on in his player coach role when Brown Ferguson left?
Oh, yeah, you know something, that you're interesting point actually. Yeah, Bomber should never have been sacked in the first place. I think that's something the board need to take a look at themselves. There was talk there, they were unhappy with some of his transfer dealings. Well, you know, if you're unhappy with Bomber's transfer dealings, I'd love to know what they made of the players that Colin signed. No, I'd be a penny for Brown Ferguson's thoughts about the whole thing. I remember him saying, he was on Twitter, I'm sure it was, where he said if the club get relegated, it will set them back years, because he worked really hard. They had a 3-year plan when he signed a contract, and it looked as though they were going to stick to it, and it just didn't make sense at the time, and as has proven to be the case. And it's a damn shame, because it's sullied. Colin's been at the club for about 5 years now, since 2014 when Scott Booth signed him, and it's just quite a sorry way for it to finish up.
How are you feeling that you've had to say Scott Booth twice in one podcast?
It's Scott Booth, no, it's fine.
Right, so we're moving
forgetting, on. I'm forgetting we're on the telly now, so people, there's perhaps a bit more scrutiny under us.
You weren't accused of going around disguised as a school. Right, Stenhouse Muir, as you said, were beaten at the weekend by Cowdenbeath. Cowdenbeath are up into third place in League Two, just 1 point by Edinburgh City and 4, I think, off the top.
Yeah, very impressed with them on Saturday, very impressed. Stenhouse Muir had played them in the final game of the Betfred Cup and beaten them 2-0. I, to be honest, didn't think much of them. I thought they were quite decent in attack with Jordan Allen and David Cox, but soft at the back, soft in the middle of the park, and Stenhouse Muir won that match with relative comfort. However, I think I underestimated them going into the weekend's game. Very impressed with them. Excuse me. Now, their three goals they scored were piss poor goals from a Stenhouse Muir perspective, but you can only beat what's in front of you. And they were attacked well. They kept Stenhouse. Sorry, I don't know what it is. I think it's a Barocca that's filled in my laptop.
Laptop, and it sounds like a viewer's like a mouse that's currently operating on it.
No, I think it's a Barocca. I once ran a cotton bud underneath this latch here, and it was absolutely filthy. Nevertheless,
filthiest Stenny's defending.
Whoa, that's good. I mean, have you seen the goals?
No.
I mean, the first goal, Craig Barr, who got in the SPFL Team of the Week, deservedly so. He won the ball back. This is in 20 minutes into the match. This is an indicator of how bad, or how good Cowdenbeath were and how bad Stenhouse Muir were. Craig Barr won the ball back in the middle of the park. He beat a man, lovely bit of skill, because Craig Barr's got that. You know, Craig Barr has played sort of defensive midfield. You know, he is got a bit of pedigree. He's a good football player. Beat a man with one of the shimmied it between his feet to take two players out of the game. Dribbled forward, played it out wide to Chris Renton, continued his run into the box. Renton tossed in this big floaty cross. One of the ones, you know, you expect your goalkeeper or defenders to reach it. They didn't, and Barr just did a simple job of nodding it in. David Cox's goal late into the...
Sorry, I'm just watching it now. That is incredibly easy. He doesn't even run into the box. He walks into the box.
But I think it's an impressive bit of skill in the middle of the park too. That was probably the highlight of the match, actually, to take the ball past Kieran Anderson and Jamie McKernan. The second and third goals were particularly poor from Stenhouse Muir's point of view, but that was thanks to Cowdenbeath's pressing and insistence. And I'd like to kind of pay tribute to this Cowdenbeath team that... Like, they've got a good goalkeeper in Kevin Dabrowski. Unfortunately, he took a whack by David Marsh, a bit of a cheap shot by David Marsh, who wants to take a bit of a look at himself after that, and he's broken his cheekbone. When they were 3-0 up and he thumped the goalkeeper, so there's no excuses for that. So they'll need to get another goalkeeper from somewhere. But Craig Barr and Jamie Todd are a solid centre back pairing. In the middle of the park, I wasn't convinced when I saw him the first time. I think Kyle Miller gives off a massive student teacher vibes, but he's very tidy, you know, just keeping things ticking over. But it's their attack that I was most impressed with. They've got Chris Renton, is what, 6'4", big, muscular, solid guy who can take balls. He fire into his feet, into his chest, into his head. He can win them and play guys into the game.
He's good at we've seen it with Scotland against Russia and Juba. He's good at pinning defenders.
That's actually a right good point. Yeah, I mean, Andy Munro and David Marsh on Tosin, he's got a big backside as well, and he can win you yards just by leaning back into people, and that hold up play can carry the team up the park. And he had David Cox, who was really good. David Cox is just pure energy, proper live wire player. The sort of guy, I don't remember as much of a pantomime villain in the lower league since perhaps Josh Falkingham at Dunfermline. The sort of guy you'd love to have in your team, but you hate it when he's playing against you. But he's a right good player. And the best player in the park, to take it back to the heart of Midlothian slant, was Connor Smith, who they've taken on. He looks a cracking player.
My mate texted me when Cowden signed Chris Hamilton and Connor Smith on loan, and just asked me what they were like. Hamilton is, from the very, very little I've seen, but also what I've heard, is a very good defender, but he's kind of Cannavaro-esque in that he's really small. So he played against Chris Boyd in his debut with
Hearts. I think he played at fullback, actually.
Yeah, so he's played at right back at times, but I think his position is centre back.
It's like supposed to be centre back, but he's really small.
Yeah, Chris Boyd just ran into him and he just flopped over, and Boyd just running, just laughing. But Connor Smith is someone that, I think around Tynecastle, that they've got higher hopes for him than they do Harry Cochran.
Wow.
It does say a lot, but I think he is just fine. There's this one piece of skill from the last game of last season against Celtic where it was gift up, and he got the ball, and similar to Mango's spit skill against Denny, he did that. He started to go one way and two Celtic players followed him. He just turned. Yeah. They kept on running, and he opened up space. Well, he's a very, very intelligent
player. That's something that I've written down about him. I mean, he's excellent touch, brilliant awareness, and it's great seeing that somebody as young as that have that sort of like intelligence, just spatial awareness around you, and Stennis you just couldn't touch him.
What I kind of want to ask is that obviously Bolan is a manager. Am I right in saying he's more of a direct kind of manager in terms of the way they play? Because Cowden do have very good players. They've got I think it's Archie Thomas.
He was okay. He scored.
You've got Connor Smith as well, and Miller, you said, he's nice and tidy in the ball. Is there a worry that they could bypass?
They did that a lot of that last season. I'm sure towards the tail end of last season, there was a real sense of dissatisfaction with the way that they were going under Bolan. Cowden beef, I think, towards like maybe the latter half of that season, never good enough to get into the top four, but too good to get sucked into the Berwick Rangers, Albion Rovers nonsense.
They had a decent squad last season.
I had a decent squad of players, and I do think there was... I went to the match, actually, where they... Albion Rovers beat them 1-0 to move off the foot of the table.
Oh, yeah.
And there was a small group of Cowden Beef fans there, and the impression I got from them, they were just fed up. The football was right back to front. Although that's at Clifton Hill, so you can maybe excuse that because of the sort of, although I'm not saying like Central Park's
you know, Bowling Green.
But I do think that Gary Bolan, I wouldn't want to say turned it around, because it is a small like sample size of games, but I mean that's three matches in a row they've won against. So who have they beaten? They beat Annan. They came right close to beating Cove Rangers as well.
Oh yeah, of course.
The fact they took a last minute winner for Cove Rangers. Not many teams will push them as far as that. The only thing I would say about Cowden is they do not have a massive group of players beyond that starting 11. The only guys of any real quality, I mean, you see Jamie Piper's a decent defender who can come in when called upon. He came in the match. Graham Taylor did a had some good games with Edinburgh City last season, and Jordan Allen, who has just returned to fitness, who's another option.
I think there's certainly been chat among Cowden fans that, especially after the Brecon game, they won 2-1, I think it was the Brecon game, they won 2-1 at the end of August, that they would quite like to see 3-5-2 as their main formation, which gives you Barr, Todd and Hamilton at the back. So you've got Hamilton, who maybe doesn't
have to do it. Second, there might have been a 3-5-2 they're playing Mullen, Fraser Mullen at left
Mullen
back and Bobby Buchanan.
Okay, so just
Ex-Hearts as well. See, this is...
So the, I think the,
it's all looking for on these podcasts.
I mean, the team against Brecon was Mullen, I and Swan. Harvey Swan as the wing backs, and you had Thomas Miller.
Ex-Stenhouse Muir, Harvey Swan.
Oh, of course. So you had Thomas Miller and Smith in the middle, and Reinton and Allen up front. And looking at that on paper, just in terms of hearing how each have done, or certainly key players there, that they've got a good chance to certainly maybe not push Cove as Cove like they
could. You know something, I'd agree with that. I do think that the size of the squad is small, so if you have an injury to Chris Renton or Kyle Miller or Fraser Mullen or something, I don't necessarily think there's the quality there that will come in and immediately replace it. However, that division overall, there is a real lack of quality there. You can only really look at Cove Rangers and Edinburgh City as the two obvious like good teams.
The next five games would probably say a lot, because I've got winnable away games at Queen's Park and Stirling Albion, but the home games are Albion Rovers, Edinburgh City and Cove Rangers.
Be interested to see. I reckon if they can take 9 points from that run of five games, I think you'd really have to consider them as top four contenders. Hard games. That sounds just a stupid thing to say, because every game's a hard game. Queen's Park are probably the dark horses in that division. Right. Albion Rovers have, at the start of the season, they're at a decent shout for the top four. Edinburgh City might have got shellacked in the first game of the season up at Cove, but they've proven themselves to be a decent side.
You've got to think that...
Still, Albion are shite. For Cove Rangers are good.
You've got to think, putting my Cowden bias on, that if they could make Central Park a really difficult place to come in terms of...
So they should.
Because it's not...
You never hear anyone as opposition player.
Play have a nice thing to say about it. And especially because you have that small pitch that you've got Rent in there who can pin defences back, that opens up the game for the likes of Smith and Thomas and Miller, etc. That if they can have a really, really strong home record, they could maybe push on and injury free.
You know, so
fight for the title.
I would say that every team in that division, even include Brecon in this, because it's still at the early stage, Brecon and Stirling, every team should be looking to finish in the top four in that division, because it's there to be won. It's a poor, poor division, and it's all up for grabs.
Okay, and if the teams that are looking to get these positions, if they go up, they might be overlapping a team who are struggling at the bottom of League One.
Yeah, Montrose, that was the other team. I only kind of briefly looked at them, but it's...
I've only got a brief amount of time left.
Oh, that's... thank God. It's been a poor campaign so far. 1 point from 6 matches, and the only points come from a draw with Stranraer on the opening day of the season.
And Stranraer are also kind of struggled a bit this season, have they not?
Oh, they were thumped by Clyde at the weekend. It was 6-1 it finished. David Goodwillie got 5 goals, which is 3 penalties, but... they all still count.
Yeah.
I hate that it says, oh, he scored 15 goals, and but 5 of them are penalties. They all still count.
To continue with the theme of the podcast, as a Hearts fan, I know how hard penalties can be to be scored by players.
Well, exactly. Better than anyone else. but it is a concern that the Montrose's form. However, I would say it's a concern, but it's not overly worrying. The games that they've been involved in this season, I looked and watched the highlights of them last night, and on the best part, there's been very little between the sides. For instance, the game against Falkirk, they could have arguably taken something for that match had Alan Fleming not chucked the ball off Connor Salmon's head and let it bounce into the net. Against Raith Rovers, for instance, they were well in the game until the final 10 minutes, where they kind of looked a wee bit tired, lost a bit of concentration, lost a bit of shape, and Raith Rovers ended up steamrolling them. And the match against East Fife at the weekend, they were very much in the game until Terry Masson was sent off for a stinking tackle. I proper straight red, 2 feet, no need for it, in the middle of the park, and East Fife took advantage of that, and Ryan Wallace and Aaron Dunsmore got the second and third goals. Do you know something? It's concerning, but I don't think it's anything to worry about because they do think they're the best coach in the lower leagues in Stuart Petrie.
I've only seen Montrose once before, but I still kind of get the impression when I look at their team that they're kind of built around
their defence.
But they're not entirely like enterprising going forward at all. I think they sometimes play like 5-4-1 and like a proper 5-4-1 as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, for what little you've seen, is it a case of just kind of lacking that bit of quality to take points?
You know something, I do think so that the Montrose, since you're going back since Chris Templeman, I don't really think they've had like a quality centre forward, and Big Sani, as we've mentioned before, was one of the most unique players,
iconic lower league,
yeah, just a weird looking fella, you know, who could do things with the ball that you don't really see elsewhere other than that sort of stuff. Just for a guy like that who could barely win a header but stick the ball in front of his feet, man, my goodness, he would take you this way, take you that way, take you all over the place. But I think that's the problem. It's like guys like Josh Skelly, he's not going to score you loads of goals. Chris Johnson's not going to score you
Craig Johnson.
Loads of goals. Yes. Right, edit that out. Craig Johnson's not going to score you that many goals.
Yeah, because looking at the names, like Ross Campbell and Craig Johnson, they just strike me as
I think the big
kind of plodding
the big players.
Even when Montrose were doing well in like League Two, I was like never really sticking their forwards in the team of the week. It was always the defenders.
Yeah,
that
right.
And I think the sort of the marquee signing, and I use marquee in the loosest sense of the word here, like Russell McLean, who they signed from Peterhead, ex-Heart of Midlothian, hey?
You know that.
I recognise the name.
He hasn't been as quite well expected. He's sort of like quite gangly in a sort of like Chris Templeman sort of way, but he's never really managed to impose himself on the games. But you know something, Stuart Petrie, this is the first time since he's taken charge of Montrose there's been any sort of wobble. Hugely successful time in charge of the club. Like, I mean, the season previous won their first ever league title in 20 odd years. And then last season, I think we said when we did the lower league bonanza, pound for pound, they were the best side in Scotland last season, given where they finished, given where people expected them to start. So I don't think there's much to worry about at the moment yet for Montrose.
Okay, that'll do us for now. Thank you very much for listening. If you'd like to hear more from us, we're going to go over at patreon.com where we're going to record another 15 minutes or so about latest happenings in Scottish football. So make sure you head over there. Well, you can also find us on Twitter and Facebook at Tez Podcast. And I think that's pretty much it. Tonight's show's coming back soon.
Aye, that's coming back. A View from the Terrace, which is loosely based on the podcast. That's coming back on Friday, 27th September, 10:30,
and
BBC Scotland.
You might
channel.
See advertisements around Glasgow and Edinburgh, your cities, because there's someone trained, someone inside of Lothian buses.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's true. A woman from my work took a picture of inside her train. There was an advertisement there, obviously. Just add that she wasn't just taking pictures, so that's good to see.
So BBC Scotland Channel next Friday. So that's Friday the
27th. Just what I said. 10:30.
Half past. I wasn't listening to that part. I was too busy looking at Joel's screen about the Lothian bus and was taken aback.
It's going to be good. Some of the ideas that are. I don't want to give too much away, but episode one, a certain duo, are back. It's Duncan McCarthy.
Podcast Network.